welcome back to the Simple Politics podcast. We're fresh from our Easter mini break and we are ready, so ready to talk about politics. How well are you, Tatton and Diane?
Very well, thank you, Charlotte. Glad to be back. Got quite sick of Easter eggs, actually, so I'm ready just to chat. Yes.
Wow.
I've got so many Easter eggs, Diane. Do you want something? You know what more? Because I'll tell you what, everyone's really lovely. Yeah. And everyone, like, because blended families and that, right? My biological children also get Easter eggs from, like, their you know, Katie's parents and all that kind of thing. So we get loads and loads of Easter eggs. And then mine are only here, like, one every other weekend. And you can't eat that much chocolate. So we've got like 8 Easter eggs in the kitchen. They're not small things, these. You've got 8 Easter eggs in the kitchen and we'll still be having them alongside our mulled wine and crackers.
Wow. This is
later in the year.
And this is where I went wrong. I didn't pace myself at all. I treated it like some kind of purge, like a Mardi Gras festival, and just ate everything.
That's the right way to do it.
That's how you should do it. Yeah. There shouldn't be any now. But they're not, like, my children aren't here enough to eat all that chocolate. So I have them tonight and just going to shut. Then there's no supper, just chocolate.
Get it done.
Eat.
Thank goodness this isn't a parenting podcast. Before we get started, I got a glare from Tatton there. To be fair, he didn't even realise it gave me a glare.
I agree. It is good that I do not go on a parenting podcast.
But to be clear, I'd be thrilled if someone gave me chocolate instead of a proper dinner. So I'm not criticising your parenting skills. Before we get started, just a reminder about our Patreon. So if you like what we do, if you're able to support us in any way, you can go to patreon.co.uk/simplepolitics. And for as little as £3 per month, you could support us and help us keep this thing running.
What's really nice is that we've not been doing this Patreon for long and we don't talk about it on socials because this is a podcast thing, right? This Patreon. And we're just building this lovely little community. And people keep joining and I really love it. And yeah, so come and join us on there. It'd be great.
And we know times are tough. So if you aren't able to support us financially, that's totally fine. If you're able to support us in other ways, for example, telling your friends and your enemies about the podcast, spread the love. That's also really, really important. So yeah, any support you give us means the world to us.
It really does.
Right, let's move on to the podcast. So, first up, we have our top post of the week. So, Tatton, what was our third most popular post this week?
Well, we don't post very often on Gaza and Israel and Iran and that whole situation that's going on over there because, well, I mean, we've been through it before. We're not experts. We don't know what we're talking about, really, on foreign affairs. We don't see that diplomatic thing. But what we do know is Parliament and UK politics. So this week, when there was a statement in the House of Commons from Rishi Sunak on Monday about the Iranian bombs and drones and things that have been shot down partly by RAF, which is why he was had to give a statement because our fighter planes were involved with it. And when our fighter planes were involved, the Prime Minister has to come and tell the chamber. It was a rare opportunity for us to really just document where the Prime Minister and the leader of the opposition, presumably our future Prime Minister, are on these crucial spaces. So it was quite a long post. It was over 4 pages. It was 2 quotes from Sunak and 2 quotes from Starmer, one on Iran, and they both said the same thing on Iran. They both said, yeah, well, we stopped Iran. Iran shouldn't have been doing it, but come on now, Israel. Don't overreact. Come on, please. Please, let's de-escalate this. And then on Gaza, where they said quite similar things, but not quite the same thing. But it's really interesting that the Prime Minister is absolutely clear now that we need to, that the aid, Israel needs to be doing more aid. Israel have been saying they're going to need some more aid. Everything has changed since they killed seven aid workers. That has really been a turning point in this. And there is some chat that Iran have really not helped themselves here, because the world opinion was becoming sterner with Israel. And then Iran gave Israel back their "we need to defend ourselves" higher moral high ground. And it's shifted things slightly again the other way. But both the prime minister and the leader of the opposition were both got to get aid in. Everyone wants some kind of ceasefire now. They can talk about pauses or whatever. Everyone in the comments, most people in the comments agree, we need some kind of ceasefire immediately and to work towards a two-state solution.
Yeah, very much on the same page, aren't they? So, yeah.
I mean, we also had, you know, George Galloway standing up, and I mean, he said that, well, there was a wide range of opinions in the Commons, but the leaders were mostly agreed, yeah.
Okay, Diane, what was our second most popular post of the week?
Okay, so another big bit of Commons business this week is MPs voted on Rishi Sunak. People are calling it his legacy already. He hasn't gone yet, but we don't know if he will, but calling it his legacy smoking
and
vaping bill.
We've got an idea,
bill.
Diane, don't we? We've got an idea.
So that's all going through. People really know about the smoking bit. It's been very, very well documented and talked about that the smoking age is going to go up. So we end up eventually having people who will never be able to legally buy a cigarette. So we don't follow the crowd at SP. What we thought we'd do is talk about vaping, which is the bit that people weren't really talking about as much. So we looked at what the rules are going to be for vaping. Now, some of these aren't quite specific yet, but they're giving the government the power to do stuff. So they will be able to say, for example, that certain flavors need to be gone. They will be able to say you're not allowed to put them on the counter. They will be able to say that packaging's too bright and too neon and too aimed at kids. So all of this power is coming, and then they're going to work with retail and health experts and really hone down the exact fine detail. But it's led to some really interesting chats. I love the comments. I read them all the time. We all read them all the time. And there's some really interesting chats about, are fruit flavors adult flavors? Surely a fruit's a fruit. Everybody eats fruit. So I find that chat really genuinely interesting. You know, can you say apples are just aimed at kids? Not sure.
but this chat, Diane, isn't just theoretically interesting. What this bill does is it gives the government the power to get rid of a flavor whenever they want. Right? If the health secretary goes, just walks through a waft of apple-flavored vape on the way into a pub, right?
Yeah.
She could turn around and go, didn't like that. Text someone. And then apple-flavored vapes will be banned forever. Or until someone brings it back. But people don't unban things very often. Mm. Like, whatever, it's rare for something to suddenly be legal again. So I think it's quite scary that the government can just do that, can say, we are giving ourselves the power to do whatever we want in the future without any scrutiny, without any comeback from anyone. That's a worry.
Mm. Yeah, because we talked about this and you described it like it's a blank check bill, really, isn't it? That's how you described it. So they can, we don't know the detail yet, but it's, yeah, interesting. And I've not really seen that before. I'm sure it's happened, but it's the first.
Oh, it does. It happens. It's right. So podders, here we go. Really technical piece of stuff here. These are called, don't go to sleep, Charlotte, stay with us. Here we go. Something called a statutory instrument, right? Or a piece of secondary legislation. And what that means is you put a bill in and you say this. And so they did it for drugs for a while when kind of you had this time when kind of new synthetic drugs were coming out quite frequently. And every time they needed a new bill, to stop them. And so if one came out in the summer for the festival season, the pollen wasn't in, they couldn't really do anything about it until September. And so they put it behind a statute. They made a bill that said it's now a statutory instrument, so we can ban anything we want without having to have a vote in Parliament, which suddenly means that the Home Secretary, whoever else it is, can just go, oh, look, there's that drug, that's banned. They then actually took that away with the Psychoanalytic Substances Bill Act, which now it says that anything that changes your mental state is illegal. And when that went through, it was hilarious. Because I was like, what about flowers? If you smell a flower, that can make you happier? Are flowers banned? Music.
Exercise.
Yeah. It was a problematic bill, but it keeps everything illegal. So building into a piece of primary legislation, that's the bills, that's the laws you see going through Parliament, they often build themselves in a little caveat so that they can carry on doing things without having to go back to Parliament. More and more frequently, they are leaving bigger and bigger and bigger caveats. And sometimes the actual front of the bill's got almost nothing in it. And it's like, yeah, but in the future, we can do whatever we want. And this vapes piece of legislation is, I think, the worst or the biggest example of this. Mm. And I am a fan of parliamentary democracy. Who isn't, right? Am I right? Team? Anyone?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
We all love parliamentary democracy.
It makes sense. I love that, like, it shortcuts things, and it's frustrating when things take a long, long time to get through.
Yes. Yes. But also, we want some accountability.
Yeah.
You know, how do we know for this vaping thing? I don't think it's. How do we know on what basis they will decide? You're saying people in the comments want to talk about apples. I enjoyed a watermelon one recently. People want to know how these decisions are being come to. And if they're not in front of Parliament, then there's no, then they literally just arbitrarily do what they want.
Yeah, so some concerns there and very interesting discussions about fruit. Love fruit discussions on the podcast.
Just one last point on that. I'm sorry, I know I'm banging on. This is my fave thing. I'll be really quick on the top post, I promise. This isn't a party political thing. There is no sign that Labour will give themselves fewer powers. Like this, when this mission creep happens, and it's been happening for a long time now, they won't come in and go, well, okay, no, we're going to hold ourselves to more scrutiny. And they're going to have a massive majority anyway, in all likelihood. So parliamentary scrutiny of the first 100 days, or parliamentary scrutiny of the first 5 years of a Labour government, if we do get one, is going to be minimal. And if they do things like this and build in this kind of shortcut, then it's going to be even less.
Mm. Okay, so Tatton, what was our most popular post of the week?
Oh, it doesn't matter anymore. Most popular post of the week was telling people to register to vote because it was on voter registration deadline that's passed. So it's too late. If you're not registered, sucks to be you. We've got elections coming up on the 2nd of May, and they're going to be great and they're really important and I love them. And we're going to be doing a lot about that on the page. And then after they're finished, we may talk about voter registration once or twice in the run-up to the general election. Because if you're not registered yet, and it does suck to be you because you can't vote on the 2nd of May, but it's not too late to register for the general election. So I look forward to that stuff.
Exactly.
Lovely, isn't it?
Wherever you are, it's always worth registering to vote, but especially if you're in Scotland and Northern Ireland, because you don't have local elections anyway, so you've not got any restrictions. 2nd of May, but it's just another Thursday. There we go.
Yeah, but on the 3rd of May, you get to start seeing the SP results service kick in. Wherever you are in the whole world, you can see that. So that's exciting.
A big one for our fans in Fiji.
Yes. Yeah, shout out to you.
Right, let's move on to the mailbag. So we're going to do something a little bit different this week. Earlier today, Diane and I snuck off to talk to a voting expert, Nikki Nixon, who is head of external communications from the Electoral Commission. So, first of all, let's hear what she had to say.
First of all, Nikki, some people are quite new to politics who follow us and listen. Could you tell us just generally about your remit? We've called you a voting expert as we're lining you up for this podcast, because you work for the Electoral Commission. You're going to talk to us about that. What powers do the Electoral Commission have? What do you guys actually do?
So we regulate political finance, which means we oversee the money that is donated to parties and campaigners and the money that they spend. We publish it on our website. We make sure it's really transparent for people. So if you want to know who is giving money to parties, you can find all of that information on our website. We also oversee the running of elections. So elections are actually run by local authorities, but we support them. We provide guidance to them. We make sure that they understand things that have changed in legislation. There have been quite a few changes recently, so we help them understand that. I should say we do the same for parties and campaigners as well. We support them to comply with the law. And then we also do lots of work with voters. So we make sure that voters understand what they need to do if they want to vote at the elections that are coming up. So that includes things like being registered and now taking ID with them to the polling station.
So on our page this week, we did a call to action to remind people to register to vote. That got shared a lot, which is great. Obviously, that's part of a campaign that you were doing as the Electoral Commission. So how many people weren't registered to vote before this campaign? And have you seen like a last minute flurry this week?
We have seen a last minute flurry. I'm really delighted, actually. We've just had the stats through. So as you say, the registration deadline was on Tuesday. It was on midnight Tuesday. And we've had more than 1 million people register in the 6 weeks that we've been running our campaign, which is fantastic. I know you were talking on your podcast last week about the impact on young people and whether young people would register. And I'm absolutely delighted that more than a quarter of those 1 million people that registered were aged under 25, which is fantastic, such a result. Yeah, really nice to see that people have registered ahead of these elections.
Yeah.
So that's hot off the press, those stats then.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned that within this flurry of extra people voting, a lot of them were younger. And we did some research, by which I mean went onto your website and read the numbers that were there, that said that less than 67% of under 24s were registered to vote in 2022, compared to more than 94% of over 55s. So what are the Electoral Commission doing to encourage younger people to register and then to vote? Like, do you have any plans to try and get more young people out?
We do. I mean, we look at the groups of voters who tend to be under-registered. It's unfortunately not just young people. There are other groups as well that tend to be under-registered. And we focus our campaign activity on those groups. We work with partners as well that we know are trusted by particular audiences, and we ask them to share the information, and that works quite well. We've also got a really exciting area of work, which is democratic education. So we go into schools and we also provide resources to schools for them to be able to talk to young people about the democratic process, about how to register and how to vote. And sometimes we're speaking to people who aren't yet a voting age, but it's really great to demystify the process and talk people through, help them understand. And we were actually in a school recently and young people were saying to us, you know, nobody does talk to them about it. Their parents might not necessarily have voted before. So it's really great to hear from somebody that can explain the process to them.
So yeah, with the general election coming up, I imagine that's going to be pretty busy for you. When that date of the general election is finally set, what will the campaign and just work with the Electoral Commission look like for you? Like, how do you convince that last set of potential voters, and what do you have to do at that point?
So when a general election is called, we will roll out two campaigns. We'll roll out our registration campaign. So we'll do a big push. We'll have around, typically we get 6 weeks' notice from the date of a poll. So we'll have around 3 weeks to get as many people as possible registered. So that will be a real focus for us. And then we'll also run our voter ID campaign. So because this is a relatively new requirement, it was introduced last year, there are still some people that don't know they need to take ID to the polling station with them. So So we'll be working really hard to make sure as many people as possible know that they have to take ID and know what to do if they don't already have some form of accepted ID, because there's a list of ID that you can use in the polling station. Not everything is on that list. So there will be some people that don't, for instance, have a passport or a driver's license or a bus pass that they can use. So we'll be telling people about, it's called a voter authority certificate, and it's basically a free form of ID. It's an A4 sheet of paper, and you can apply for that from your council or online. So we'll be making sure that as many people know about that. That will be a really big focus of our voter engagement work. And then we'll also be doing lots of work with local authorities to make sure they're ready. We'll be doing lots of work with parties and campaigners so that they understand that they need to report their spending to us and their donations to make sure that we're all ready.
Maybe just as a final closing one, we haven't written this in or anything, but just if you got one message that you could give, because we've got quite a young demographic who listen to this podcast and who follow the Simple Politics page, particularly on Instagram. What if you had a last kind of message, a last couple of sentences to tell them, what would you say?
The elections are a brilliant opportunity to have your say. They don't come around very often, so don't miss the opportunity. And just take a minute before polling day to make sure you have everything you need. Really, all you need is your ID. So just take a minute, make sure you've got that, and then you're all set, and enjoy polling day, because it's good fun getting out there and voting.
There you go. And that's from an expert. So if you don't listen to us, listen to the expert.
Exactly. Cool. Well, I enjoyed that chat. But Tatton, we couldn't leave you not answering a question, because it's your favourite bit. And, you know, obviously listeners would be devastated as well. So we've got
it's
one.
Tough. It's tough for everyone.
We've got one in the bag, haven't we, Charlotte?
We have. Just for you.
Before we get there, I just want to say thank you very much for that. I thought that was a really, really useful and interesting chat. So thank you both very much.
And it's also worth saying that if you follow us on Patreon, if you support us on Patreon, you'll get to hear the entire chat with Nikki. So we've given you a flavour here, some of the top questions, but on Patreon for your monthly bonus episode this month, we're going to have the whole interview there. So another reason to sign up for the Patreon.
That does also mean you don't have to listen to me on the bonus podcast this week. You get an extra slice without me, which is rather appealing, I think.
No one's going to sign up now, Tatton, because they don't get volume. Anyway, on to the question, which is from Maggie in Milton Keynes, who asks, on the 21st of March, the British Youth Council, which is an organisation that has championed youth voices in politics for over 75 years and is responsible for the running of the UK Youth Parliament, announced their permanent closure as a result of ongoing financial challenges. My question to you is, in your opinion, do you believe that the government will work to keep the BYC afloat? And why do you think this issue has not made national news?
Maggie, you're not going to like anything I've got to say on this. And I'm sorry for that, because, I think it's all rubbish. I think I'll take the second one first. Why do you think this issue has not made national news? We get that question all the time at SP. I am fighting for whatever it is. Why is this not this huge issue? Or why is this not seen as a huge issue? And the answer is, it's just really hard to focus the national attention on something. And you need, so sometimes it's that you need a figurehead, right? So if the prime minister cares about your issue, the prime minister is going to talk about it and it's going to be a big thing. You know, sometimes it's a celebrity or whatever else. There are lots and lots and lots and lots of issues in this country, in this continent, in this planet. There are so many that we cannot talk about all of them all the time, and things get pushed out. And the main thing is, do I believe that the government's going to work to keep the British Youth Council afloat? No. No, I don't. I think that political engagement and youth voices is something that people kind of vaguely talk about wanting, but literally nobody just gets on with it and does it. And that's a massive problem. I mean, we talk about But, you know, we would try and do things with Youth Voices. There's a wonderful group of people called the Politics Project. They work directly with young people. There's the British Youth Parliament, I think. Is that what it's called these days? I don't know. I think it changed name recently. There are all these organisations, but there is no money. So Hattie, who runs Politics Project, has worked incredibly hard to get to make that work. And she's done, she's a wonderful woman and she's worked brilliantly. You know, we do what we do. We just about make it work with the help of our lovely Patreon backers, www.patreon.com/politics. There's just in this space that we're in, that Maggie, that you're in, there is no money and people give it lip service about being important and then don't fund it. But money's really tight. You know, if someone said, hey, Tatton, do you want money for this lady's operation at the local hospital, or should we fund SP for a bit? I'd be like, do the operation. Great, do it. There is no money. So it's all a mess. And we need to think our sector, and I think, you know, I would put us in the same sector as the British Youth Council. It's about youth empowerment. It's about voices. It's about understanding what's going on. It's all a state. And someone, I don't know who, not me, needs to, I mean, do you know what? Hattie from the Politics Project does a lot of coordinating stuff. We need to work out how, what we're doing and how we're going to get there. Because if everything closes, then there will be nothing. And that's not going to work for anyone.
Yeah.
Sorry, absolutely. Maggie.
I know. It is really sad to hear about this because when you look at the British Youth Council, they've been going for 75 years. So you think something that's got through that long, that many decades of doing it, that's a really sad thing. But, you know, for you, Maggie, you're clearly passionate about this. You know, just keep going in whatever way you can. Find other avenues, you know. Don't give up.
Yes, because that's it. The British Youth Council may be going, Maggie, but you're not.
Yeah.
And that's what matters. You keep doing you and talking about and engaging with and doing all this stuff, and you will be a force for good. And we'll work together. Let's go.
Great job, Maggie. Keep going. Right. Time now for PM Watch, is where we look at what's been going on with the Prime Minister this week. Tatton, what's Sunak been up to?
I've been a bit ranty so far. And the good news is, that I'm sure that's going to stop because we're about to talk about Rwanda.
Oh, yeah. And guaranteed to stop.
And we've got parliamentary procedure coming out of our ears. I mean, it's just... Okay, so... I mean, it's so hard to know even where to start when you're talking about Rwanda, but I will be as quick as I can. We all know the Rwanda policy was was created by Boris Johnson and Priti Patel when they were the dynamic duo, Prime Minister and Home Secretary. And the idea is to, when people arrive here illegally, we don't let them stop. We fly them straight to Rwanda, where their application for asylum will be treated, will be assessed, and if they are told yes, you are a refugee, you have the right to asylum, you can stay here in Rwanda, which is a safe country, right? That's the idea. If you're not, you'll be deported. That's the point. People need somewhere safe to go, and we as a country will facilitate somewhere safe to go. Right? That's the plan. And they did a whole bill about it, and they got a plane, and they filled the plane with people. And one by one, the courts got the people off the plane again until there was nobody left on the plane to go to Rwanda. And then it went to court, and then it did this. And what it comes down to is the government need to stop legal challenges. And the biggest legal challenge there is Rwanda isn't in fact a safe place. We've got no legal way of stopping you taking people to somewhere safe to have to live out their happy life away from whatever it was they were fleeing, right? But Rwanda's not safe. And the government have said, I know how to make Rwanda safe. We're going to say it's safe.
Yes.
And that's what the bill, the current bill, is the Rwanda is safe bill, brackets, honest gov. And it's, you know, the Conservatives have a majority, the government have got it through, and the House of Lords have just really, they've been really, their job is to make the government look again, make Commons look again at bits. And they normally do that once, maybe even twice, but they're really kicking back against the government right now. And they had like 15 changes, and then it's 6 changes, then 4 changes. There's now just 2 changes left. One is that the people who decide whether it's safe or not in Rwanda should be independent monitoring people in Rwanda, which some would say it makes sense. But the government say no, because the people who are putting these things in are people who hate the scheme anyway. This is playing political games. This isn't about anything. We have people in Rwanda and we say it is safe because it is safe, is what the government say to that. This is a technical blocking amendment from the House of Lords. And it was proposed by Labour peers, right? So there is a lot of Labour involvement in that one. And then there's the other key change. And that is people who worked with us in Afghanistan, with our troops, shouldn't be sent. And that is harder for the government to say is Labour playing tricks, because you've got members of the House of Lords who are like admirals in the forces. You aren't members, you know, you've got serious military people who have done serious military things who are in no way affiliated to Labour. You know, the armed forces is not famously a hotbed for Labour activists. And they say, we cannot do this to our Afghan colleagues and comrades. And the government say, we have brought thousands, tens of thousands of Afghan people through legally. That's what we want. And anyone coming illegally has to be treated the same. They say that the point is, they want to come to the UK because they were safe in France. France is definitely a safe country. Everyone says France is a safe country. Everyone knows France is a safe country. So they could stop there. They could stop there and apply for asylum, but instead they choose to pay people traffickers, people smugglers, not traffickers, to get to the UK, and that's what has to be stopped. Because people need to know that if they come to the UK, they could then go. That's the point. It's a deterrent system. Mm-hmm. So there's no point in trying to come to the UK and risking your life and spending that money. Because if you do make it to the UK, you then won't stay in the UK. You'll go to Rwanda. That's the idea. And the government say, we have helped thousands of Afghans settle here in the UK. And everyone who comes must be treated the same, because nobody should be paying people smugglers. We're going to stop the gangs. We're going to stop the boats. We're going to get rid of it. So those are 2 changes that are coming in, and it's going to come back on Monday. I'm slipping into crystal ball here. It's going to come back on Monday, and on Monday, the government will take those changes out. What are the Lords going to do next? I mean, nobody knows. They are pretty, if you read the newspapers, if you listen to the radio this morning, they are pretty keen on both these amendments. Like they're not saying, oh, well, maybe we should let Afghan people go to Rwanda. They are hardcore on it. And then it was Defense Secretary Grant Shapps was on the radio this morning, and he was saying, We need to get rid of these changes, because we just need to get planes off. We need to stop legal challenges. We need to get planes off, and we need to stop the boats. So this one will rumble on.
Mm. Yep. Bill passing does not mean it's a done deal. It is the start of everything, isn't it? It's the start of...
Yeah, I mean, because Care for Calais, in particular, have been fundraising all the time this bill's been in the Commons and in Parliament. They've been fundraising, and they've got a lot of money now ready to spend in the courts. And the government, I think, believe that they have bulletproofed this bill. I mean, this bill has been specifically made to stop it being challenged in the courts. Mm. Now, people will try, but the government, I believe, really do think they've got this. And like, bring on the challenges. We're going to get this done. And they've also, there's a measure to mean that you can't have your removal delayed by challenges. You can be challenged, can be heard once you've been removed. But that's, you know, that's not as rock solid, I don't think. But they will choose for the first people, for the first plane, they are going to choose people who definitely have the least cause for, you know, right to family life is a mm-hmm. is something that you can't be deported for, but or sent to Rwanda for. But you can't, if you've only just arrived, you have to have been in the country for a certain amount of time in order to claim right to family life. Because if you've just met someone once, that's not family life. Mm. So it will be recent arrivals. Because anyone who's been here for more than a year will start to claim they've got family life. So it'll be, that's just one example. The people on that first plane will be recent arrivals because it cuts out that level, that layer of appeal.
So, yeah, a big one and something I'm sure we'll be returning to in future podcasts. Let's move on to our crystal ball and see what is going to be happening over the next week. So, Tatton, what's in your crystal ball?
Trying to get my children to eat more chocolate.
Fair enough.
I've done mine. It's Rwanda.
Okay, fair enough. Diane, what's in your crystal ball?
Well, we have got the last full week of local election and mayoral campaigns. So, you know, that's going to be something we want to talk about, what they're saying out around the regions. If we can bring you that next week, that would be really, really good.
It's May that soon. That's yeah. terrifying.
May is that soon.
2 weeks today as we record local election day. Yeah. 1 week today is my birthday.
Oh, I'll put that on the calendar.
It's on the calendar.
Yay.
It's on our calendar. Yeah. I mean, it's not on like every calendar. Like if you're going to buy a calendar in a shop,
yeah,
it's not like there.
No.
It's not like the Queen's birthday. Is that still on there? I'd say probably not.
No, no, no.
But that was the 21st, so I could pretend it was not. Anyway, that's all we have time for this week. So thank you very much for listening if you've managed to get this far. And we hope you'll listen again next week. Thank you. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, 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 bye.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.